I remember one email that you sent me that you started with, like, dude, I need to do some. I loved that you called me dude. It was like, we're friends. Somebody called me dude. You know, like, oh my
really?
God.
Really? Oh, yeah, yeah. I love calling people dude.
I love it too.
I think I wrote you and I was like, dude, my day is fucked. Like, I need, we need to reschedule this.
I was so happy, Lisa. I think that email made my day.
Hello, shiny Epi people. I'm Lisa Bodner. So happy that you're here. Welcome to the show. As a reminder, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ShinyEpiPeople. And if you would like to support the show financially, the show is at Patreon at patreon.com/ShinyEpiPeople. And if you don't want to support the show via Patreon, totally cool with me. Please share the show with your friends. That's actually really, really helpful. Today, I am speaking with Marcia Pescador-Yamines. Sorry, my Spanish accent is like really bad. Marcia is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in the Department of Epidemiology. She's an incoming assistant professor in epidemiology at Boston University. She received her PhD at Brown, and her research focuses on addressing the influence of spatial determinants of health throughout the life course. She's interested in access to green space on cardiovascular health, cognitive decline, and health disparities. Marcia is originally from Mexico City, and in this chat, she tells me about her move to the U.S., including challenges in writing and speaking about her research in English, and negotiating a job offer in the U.S. Marcia talks about how much guidance and mentorship she has received throughout her career, and how some of that has come from sending cold emails to researchers to ask for help. So we break down what is in some of those emails as a framework for others who may not know how to write one of these. Marcia is simply delightful, which you can tell from the very first words out of her mouth to me. I hope you enjoy this chat. Hey, Marcia.
Can you tell my excitement?
Yes, I can. Well, I could tell through your emails. Your emails were like, woohoo, I can't wait.
I know, I'm so excited about it. I'm like sweating because of nervousness. I like feel sick. And this is like worse than like the dissertation process, I think.
No, I loved that you were so enthusiastic. I thought that was amazing.
Thank you for inviting me. This is my girls' night out, although it's 3 p.m. I know.
That's super fun. So when did you come to the U.S. from Mexico?
First, I actually lived in Belgium. I lived there for a couple of years because I went to study a master's in Belgium and I met my husband in Belgium actually. Okay. So we were both at a salsa bar at the, like, you know, the right moment, the right time. We met, we fall in love. Oh. And yeah, I came here because of him basically.
Okay.
Yeah, I never liked the US. I don't think I've told people about this before. Yeah. So, I don't know, growing up in Mexico, it's weird. It's like you depend so much on the U.S., you know, for everything, financially, but politically, you're so dependent. So, you grow up with this sense of being liberated from the U.S. Like, I didn't want to do anything with the U.S. And then I fall in love with an American guy. It's like, shit. I was here the first year. I moved here, what was it, 2010? And the first year was actually a bit harsh because I still had this mentality of, I don't really want to be here. What am I doing here? But then I started meeting people and I was very impressed with how nice they were to me. I really like it now. I'm very, very happy. I think that this country has so much to offer.
What do you miss about living in Mexico?
Family. Yeah, that's the worst part.
Your family.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, especially having little children.
How old are they?
So I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. Yeah, I think that has been the hardest in terms of everything, in terms of my mom not being able to play with them, but also me not being able to just say, "Mom, here are the girls. I need a break. Bye." You know, like my husband and I are pretty much on our own. So yeah, that has been a weird part of life, raising kids without family around.
Aside from your family, what do you miss about being in Mexico?
People are really, they love to party. It's almost part of the culture. Like, I remember living there, you would party starting Friday until Sunday. But it's also because people are so tired and so stressed. Like, now I can see it because a lot of people have not just one job, but 2 or even 3 jobs because they cannot afford to have only one. So by the end of the week, they are exhausted. They just want to forget about everything. So you start drinking, you start dancing.
It sounds super fun.
It's fun. I remember like a baptism, right? It would start at noon. It would finish like at 3 a.m. with grandpa like on the floor.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I imagine it's a case where like no one is self-conscious about like what they look like dancing.
Oh, no. They love to that. It's just so cool. It's like, yeah, they dance like they don't care. But everyone, like I'm telling you, the grandma, grandpa, uncles, aunt, everybody's just dancing. It gets very dramatic too. Like people start fighting around 1 a.m. You know?
Yeah.
But I think it's also part of the culture. I don't know. Like, yeah, it's just all very exciting.
You mentioned this to me before we talked, that you have to explain your research in another language. Can you talk some about this?
So it's, I think one of the things that I've had more trouble with is explaining myself in English. And it's also like when I talk and also when I write like a paper or even emails, it's so hard for me, even though I've been here for 10 years. People don't talk about this enough. Being able to explain your research and explain it clearly in your own language is hard enough. Yeah. In another language, it's like even worse. Like you cannot find the words, or like I go to the thesaurus like looking for synonyms so many times.
I do that. English is my first language and I still do it. No, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just so hard, Lisa. I don't know. It's been one of the hardest things that I've had to do when studying abroad. It started in Belgium. When I moved to Belgium, my master's was in English. And it's funny, I never thought about it, but when you study in another language, you really have to focus to learn something. You know, like when it's your own language, you can just like do stuff a little bit or even like sleep. Like, but the words will still enter you somehow, right?
Right, yeah.
But if it's another language, you really have to focus. It's weird, but otherwise it's like the class never happened and you never learned anything. So, yeah.
Do you feel like writing in English, it ends up taking you a really long time to produce something?
Yeah. Writing is one of the hardest things that I have to do in this career. And, you know, my background was very much focused on statistics and numbers. And I was like, I can do anything, you know? Uh-huh. And then, okay, write an abstract and tell me why your research is important. I was like, no, don't. No, I don't want to do that. Like selling your research yourself, it's just so difficult. So at the beginning, what I would do is I would pick a couple of papers that I liked and then try to copy the pattern of the writing.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes.
But that's hard to do too. Like it's really recently that I've started writing on my own, you know, like with my own words, like just without seeing anything or without copying everything. It's been 10 years, Lisa, that I've been here. And just really in the last couple of months, I've started actually writing on my own. I think imposter syndrome was very important to me because I didn't know it existed until late in the game. It kind of validated what I was feeling, you know? Even my husband made fun of me, which now that I think of it, it's a mean thing to do. But but I remember telling him, I think they're going to find out, you know, that I'm not as good as they thought I was.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I remember saying those words, Lisa. And wow. This is why I say that it's mean, because he would say, you think they found out already? But I didn't know that was a thing, you know, like, and the same words that I told myself, those were the exact same words of imposter syndrome. So I was like, ah, that's what I've been feeling this whole, my whole life, almost.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of made me feel better in a way to know that it was a thing and it was not me.
Yes.
In academia, when people talked about the research or what they did, they sounded all so confident to me. And I felt like this tiny person.
Really?
So when I heard that people felt that way, it helped me so much. It's like, ah.
It's so much a thing that we have a name for it. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That enough people feel like this that someone gave it a syndrome. called it a syndrome.
Yeah.
How lucky we are.
I remember my mentor from the postdoc, he was writing an R01 and he asked for my opinion on his grant. I was like, what?
Really?
Yeah. I was like, you really want my, I know nothing. Like, why are you interested? You know, like, are you faking this? Are you just trying to be? I mean, Now I feel that right now I know that he was genuinely interested in my opinion, and maybe I did have something to say about it.
I don't know that I've talked to anyone yet who is on a K99 ROO. Could you just talk a little bit about it, why you felt like that was, well, just to explain to people like what the mechanism is, and then why you felt like it was the right thing to try instead of, like, you know, going a different route?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one of the reasons why I applied for a K and the timing of applying, I think that's important too, was because it was really an advice that someone gave me. And apply for a K on the first year of your postdoc. Yeah, so briefly, a K is a mechanism through the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, that funds your research. Depending on what type of K, it can be for up to 5 years. In my case, the K99R00 is kind of a two-stage mechanism. So the K99 part gives you funding for up to 2 years on your postdoc. And then as you transition to a faculty position, it gives you, the funding continues through the ROO for 3 more years. So in total, you have up to 5 years of funding. Applying during the first year of the postdoc was key, because if you don't get it or if you have to resubmit, by the time you have to resubmit, I think you're up to the end of your second year, and you're probably run out of funding before the K99 kicks in. So if you apply too late, then you're in this weird position where you have no funding and you're waiting to hear back from your K. This is also what I wanted to talk to you about kindness in academia.
Yeah.
I've talked to so many people that gave me such good advice without even knowing me. Like, I haven't met these people. I've only emailed them. I had this 15-minute phone call with someone that I've never met, and they just tell me whatever they think will help me. And they are really, like, changing my life, you know, with a 15-minute phone call.
Yeah.
I'm just so thankful for people to, you know, be that nice and be willing to share their experience and tell you what works, what hasn't worked. So I think that's just wonderful. I know that I wouldn't be where I am without them.
That's awesome. How were you connected with them?
Yeah. One way is definitely through mentors that tell me, they connect me through email. They introduce me. This is Marcy. This is blah, blah. Another is actually me just sending away emails like, hi, I'm Marcia. I'm interested in this. I know you're interested in this too. Do you have 5 minutes to talk? I've been doing that since even before I started my PhD, and people answer. Like, they are so willing to talk to you and give you 30 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour of their time. And I've made so many collaborations just through starting, you know, like sending an email without CCing anyone. Like, it's just really me, a student, writing them.
In addition to kindness, which is what you were talking about before, I think it also has something to do with you and your approach to those emails. Could you talk for a minute about what you maybe do in those emails that, because I think that they have to convey a sense of confidence and accomplishment, respect. What do you think about those emails? You don't know these people, you haven't CC'd anyone. Why they respond?
I've never thought about that really. The way I write those emails, it is with a lot of respect. You know, I start like, dear doctor, blah, 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 thank you very much for your time. You know, like, so I don't think I show a lot of confidence. Like, I'd never show a lot of confidence. I'm not sure about that.
Well, part. I think just sending an email like that cold suggests some level of confidence.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, I remember these because of her. I remember when I was applying to grad school, when I was still in Mexico and I was applying to grad school outside of Mexico, I was terrified of writing emails to professors outside. And she said, what's the worst that can happen? The no is already there. Like, if you don't write it, it's you have your answer.
I love that.
Yeah. So I think that's stuck in my mind, and it's totally true. Like, if I don't write, nothing is going to happen. If I write, the worst thing that can happen is that they are not going to answer, and that's fine. But that's why I send not one email, but maybe five or six, because one of those is going to end up in something good. So I think that's where the confidence comes from. And then I always attach my CV. I don't know if that's also good.
Yes, that's critical.
I mentioned my position. I mentioned what I am working on. I also try not to make it too long, because otherwise they're not going to read it. I also say, what do I want to talk about? Like, something specific. If it's an advice for a K, I would say, I'm writing a K, would love to hear about your experience. And the last part. See, I do have a partner. I didn't even realize I had like this part.
I know.
Yeah, the other part is that I mentioned the time that would work. I don't leave it like whenever you can talk. I say sometime in the next week, or if I am like really pushy and I really need an answer, I mention specific date, like next week, these days could work for me. Thank you very much in advance.
And so has the worst thing that's happened just not a response?
Right. Yeah. Honestly, because nobody has replied, you're a waste of time, or I don't have time, you know,
like. Like, LOL, LOL, LOL. Like, nobody's doing that.
No.
And I also want to add, as someone who has gotten those emails and had really the very best intentions of replying, that it's often not about the person in the email. I'm so overwhelmed, I can't get to all of these things. I feel like also persistence is very important. And that if I didn't hear from someone, I was like, I'm going to reach back out in like a month. And when I get those emails, I'm like, they're committed to this, right? This wasn't just like they fired off this email to like 30 people.
Yeah. Sometimes when people don't reply and I really want to talk to them, I send another email. Like, nothing had ever happened. You know, like, you never ignored me. That did not happen. I agree with you completely. I don't feel personally offended. I know people are super busy. If they didn't reply And then maybe we meet in a conference. Before, when it was in person, I would go ask a question and some make a connection somehow. So I would try other ways to connect with that person. One thing that I wanted to talk about, like being a non-American.
Okay.
And going through job offer and that kind of stuff. Because, you know, we don't really know what we should look for in a job offer, in a contract. Mm. I am very, very grateful for my mentors, because I remember when I got the job offer, I sat with them for 1 hour going through each point in the letter. I don't know how to deal with that. I've never had a job offer from an institution in the United States. Yeah. And there were even terms that I didn't even, I hadn't heard in my life, you know, like fringe.
Yes.
That, you know.
Yes.
One thing that I'm not sure if I explained clearly is how important it is to reach out to people, not to one or two. Like I reached out to so many people and everybody was helpful in different ways, that among them I created 100, like this person gave me 1% of information, yes, that 10, that 5.
It was like when you get mentoring, sometimes it can be from one person, but it often feels like research to me.
Right.
I'm going to gather information from a whole bunch of different people. And then I'm going to take all their answers and I'm going to look at them together and then figure out what fits for me.
Because some people might, like if I remember the first person that I reached out about this transitioning that I was going through, the advice that I got was, don't deal with this anymore. Like, you're in a good spot. Stop it right there. But I was like, I think there's more to it in here.
Yeah.
So I talked to more people and it ended up being such a great thing for me. You know, that if I had stopped at that first step, it would have been so different.
You have to trust your instincts and know, right, like, okay, I'm going to ask one more person.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this isn't me just being obsessive. I mean, maybe 50% of it
is 75.
Right. But it's not 100%. Like,
exactly.
I know enough to say, like, I'm going to do a little bit more digging into this. Marcia, what makes you laugh no matter what?
My daughter is in this farting phase. And the little one is starting to catch up. So so at some point, the 4-year-old will say, "Oh, I farted," and the little one would say, would start like making noise, like pff, pff, making so much.
Do you have something that you're embarrassed to admit that you like?
So I'm watching on like a loop. Have you heard of Jane the Virgin?
Yes.
I love it so much, Lisa.
But why are you embarrassed that you like it?
Because it's too obvious that I would like it. It's a Latina living in the
Yeah, that's right.
She's kind of a nerd. She has a baby. It's like me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Who were you cheering for her to get a relationship with?
I was actually cheering for Michael. I never
were
heard you? Yeah.
And then he died in the end, right?
No, he died and then he... I cannot believe it. They erased his memory so he couldn't remember how he loved Jane. Anyway,
I love that. I love that so much. What's something you always procrastinate on?
Oh, emails. Emails.
You are not particularly responsive to my emails. I mean, you were, but it always took a while. And I was like, yeah, she must not be an emailer. Like, I knew.
I actually draft the email and I don't send it because I'm not sure it's good. Okay, so if I'm being completely honest,
yeah,
I think the first time that you wrote me, I was so excited. I replied immediately. I started writing immediately. And I was like, Lisa, this would be great. I'm so excited. And I was like, okay, I'm going to cool down. I'm going to take it easy. I went for a walk. I slept on it. So it's not that I actually haven't written the response, you know, and then I like edited. So that's what happened behind the scenes of my replying to Lisa Podnar.
What's your most dreaded household chore?
The bathroom, cleaning the bathroom. I had to do that since I lived with my brothers, cleaning. I know.
Boys are so fucking disgusting in the bathroom.
I know.
Ooh, hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
Yes, Cole.
I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. Right as I'm saying to you.
I know.
Boys are so disgusting in the bathroom.
Hi, honey. I know.
What's your favorite thing to do in the summer?
We make these, like I blend sandia with, why am I talking to you in Spanish?
I like it. I don't know, but keep going.
I don't know why I do that. Watermelon.
Okay.
I make like, it's not like a juice. We call it like watermelon water. That would be true.
Yeah. Okay.
So that with ice in a hot summer day, it's the best thing.
And what's your favorite thing to do in the winter?
You know, we went for the first time ever sledding with the girls. I've never done that before.
Aww.
I don't really know how you fall down sledding, but I did. my feet were up in the air. I cried laughing. I don't think I've cried laughing in years. It was so much fun. Yeah. I loved it. I want to go every day sledding. It was so much fun.
I'm going to say a list of things and you're going to say yes or no.
Okay.
Scented candles.
No.
Oh, the face you made was really, you were very serious about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Kardashians.
No.
Honeydew.
What is that? The
it's like
soda.
A green melon? No. No, that's Mountain Dew. Oh.
Are they related?
I love that. No.
What is honeydew? So, it's a melon?
Honeydew is a green melon.
Do you know? I love that. We actually have one. Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
No. Okay. Oh, that makes me so happy. Roller coasters.
Yes.
Yeah?
I loved it. Yeah.
High-waisted pants.
Oh, I love them. Yes. So good.
Really? Why do you love them?
It's so comfy. It's like pregnancy, right?
Oh.
You know, that's my association. It's like, okay. I can just put my belly out there. I don't know.
Okay. Instant coffee.
No. I'm a big coffee drinker and no.
Flip-flops.
Yes.
Salsa in a jar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I know. I'm actually not very good Mexican in that sense. I actually eat chili.
Okay. Talking to strangers in an elevator.
Yes.
Talking to strangers in a full elevator
when no
one else is talking.
No. That's too much. That's pushing.
Okay. What about talking to a friend in a full elevator when no one else is talking?
No. Yeah.
Okay. Marcia, this was so much fun.
I love this. Thank you so much. Yeah, I love that. And I hope to meet you in person. I think I'm just going to straight hug you. I hope you don't mind that I'm going to just hug you.
It's going to be lovely.